Discord. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Melrose Sheltering in Place. I'm Nan.
And I'm Christopher. And I just listened to our last episode, and I feel super in the
because
moment.
I just posted it at like midnight last night. Yeah,
it occurred to me partway through my Sunday morning walk. It's Sunday, by the way. My Sunday morning walk, I was like, oh, I should check and see if the podcast is there, because if it is, I want to listen. And it totally was, and that was exciting.
Yeah, I kept putting it off, I think in part because I was going to have to fix that end part where we got off track, and I was going to have to edit the audio, and I just was like, oh, it's going to be so hard, and it ended up working out really easily. So, nice. That was good. And then last night I sat down and it was like 10 o'clock. And I thought, I've got to get that episode posted before we record this next episode, or I'm going to feel like a total tool. So here we are. We've posted it last night, and now we're recording this episode that I will probably post in 2 weeks.
Well, you know, you don't ever have to feel too bad about if something takes a while to get posted. Because you could just do what Melrose Place did last time and have a double episode.
Oh my gosh, double episodes.
We've done that once before, I think.
Yeah, well, I think that's right. Also, we did that mega episode where we just did the whole entire second half of season one in one big episode.
That was an awesome episode.
Because season one sucked so bad.
Yeah, Tiege from Melrose Place cast always talks about how jealous he was that we did that because season one is so bad. But then Melrose Place cast turned around and did 5 extra special episodes when they finished season one, all about season one. So I don't know. I mean, every episode was fantastic, but you know, you can cut and run when you get to the end of the season.
Yeah, honestly, if I was going to make one recommendation to anybody who is just starting their Melrose Place journey and doesn't have to record a podcast about it, just skip season one.
Yeah, that's easy.
Honestly. I guess you miss a couple of important things, but not really. I think you can drop in on season two and be okay.
Yeah, probably. And, you know, that's kind of the way soap operas are anyway. Like, a lot of soap operas run for 30, 40 years. You have to be able to just drop in and catch on after a while, so.
Sure. Maybe that's why, before we started recording, Christopher and I were talking about how it's impossible to remember what happens on this show because too many things happen. And that's also the soap opera thing, right? You know how, like, the stories in this show tend to weirdly resolve themselves in a 3-episode arc at most? You know, like, Sydney joined a cult. And I think some of that's going to keep going a little bit. But, like, you know, like, it, I don't know. It's just, I think that's part of the formula, right? Is that you can kind of tune in and out and catch a lot of the storyline.
Speaking of Melrose Place, the show is in the news this week. Josie Bissett, who plays our favorite Jane, told some people that she's trying to relaunch the show with the original cast.
What?
Yeah.
That just sounds like it's because she doesn't have anything else going on. I mean, I don't want to be rude, but this is probably the most famous thing she's ever done.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, but who on the show really does have anything going on? Like,
I mean, hell, that seems like a fun thing to do.
I'd watch it.
Like, everybody get together and just keep doing Melrose Place forever.
Although it makes me sad because obviously when it comes out, we would want to watch it, but we're watching the show in order. So I don't know how we would handle that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we might just have to be patient and wait till we get there or until we can't stand the podcast anymore and quit. But I don't see that happening for me. I love doing it.
I know, but I'm just like, do we think we're going to make it all the way to the end of this show?
I think I can.
I don't know. Stay tuned to find out. Like, that's the big never-ending question of this podcast.
I think we're doing a great job. Like, not only did we skip half of season one, but then we started covering 3 episodes, every episode, and
yes,
also spacing out our recording schedule so that it suits us. Like,
we're very flexible with each other. Yeah. Like, if we couldn't, like, switch around our schedule as easily as we do, I would definitely not be able to maintain it just because I've got too many things happening. So, I mean, yes, we are doing a great job.
Yeah, go us.
Yeah. This is a great conversation. What else is going on?
Not a lot. My cargo van update is I did get the backup camera. The installation was delayed by maybe a week or so because I kept waiting for them to call me. And I finally wondered what was taking so long, and I called them. And when they tried to look up my account by my phone number, it didn't bring up anything. And that's because they took down my phone number wrong. So when they tried to call me, they couldn't.
Oh, my God.
And guess what? This is the second time in a row that that has happened. And both of them were things regarding the cargo van. I was also waiting for a warranty repair on the cargo van at the Ford dealership. And they didn't call, and they didn't call, and they didn't call. And then, yeah, I didn't catch what number they supposedly had for me, but the new people, the backup camera people, they transposed two numbers in the middle part.
Man, that sounds very frustrating.
Yeah, from now on, I'm going to make everybody who takes down my number read it back to me without fail.
I have this number, my telephone number, the last four digits are this sequence that for some reason is really hard to both say and for people to hear. And so I always have to triple quadruple check because people get it wrong way more frequently than one would expect if I just tell it to them the first time. So yeah.
Speaking of the last four digits, I have the same cell phone number that I've always had. And when I went to go get it in 2000, the guy at the Sprint store told me, hey, you can probably have just about any last four numbers that you want as long as it's above 3500. And so I looked at the keypad and I was like, is 3825 available? And he said, yeah, do you want that? And I'm like, yes, absolutely, because that spells fuck.
I was going to say, that was the very first word that came to my head as well for the last four digits was fuck.
And it's cool because it also spells duck. So I have the PG version.
So now y'all all know that Christopher's last four digits of his number
are 3825. And you also know that I live in Washington State, which has four or five area codes. So if you are very patient, you can probably call me. But getting a hold of us via Instagram is much faster. Melrose sheltering in place on Instagram.
Can I do a little self promo?
Absolutely. Not that,
I don't know if our six listeners will be into this, but I have a band with my spouse called Little Beards, and our record is coming out on Friday, September 24th.
Awesome.
On Bandcamp. We're just doing Bandcamp. We recorded it at home in the pandemic and Little Beards, and not to be confused with Little Beard, the singular, it is Little Beards, the plural. And the record is coming out September 24th on Bandcamp.
Well, I'm buying it for sure.
Yeah.
In fact, the only music I've bought lately is from Bandcamp. This will be the third purchase in a row on Bandcamp.
Yeah, I mean, I am super outlier city where I have literally never, ever, ever, ever gotten in on the MP3 train or the downloading train, like for real. I have this ripoff iPod thing that Sean got me a few years ago, and he loaded it up with a bunch of music that I would like, and I've literally just never even fucked with that. Like, I just keep that music as like, okay, this is some music that I like that I will listen to sometimes when I can find this thing at the bottom of my purse. But I listen to a lot of podcasts. I am a music person, but I don't want to listen to music all the time because I feel like it dulls my interest in it. Like, I need it to be a little bit more special than that. But also, I really enjoy the experience of listening to music on the radio. So we have this radio station here. It's Mesquite school radio. So I think it's run by the ISD, like the high schoolers. They don't really have a lot of DJs, though. It's mostly just music. And it's all like easy listening from like the 60s, 70s, 80s.
Interesting.
And that is extremely my jam. And I like the surprise of listening to the radio and hearing, aha, this thing, you right. know, as opposed to when I'm totally in control of what I'm listening to, I'm not having any kind of like, I'm just putting on what I want and like listening to that. And I have this weird relationship with that. Like, I know most people will be like, well, doesn't just listening to what you want to listen to like sound really good? And I'm like, actually, I really enjoy the experience of surprise. Like, oh my God, it's that song I like. And I wasn't expecting to hear it right now. Like, I like that. And also the feeling of discovery, right? Like, I've heard so many songs on that radio station that I went and, you know, like, fell in love with and everything. So, I like the radio.
Nice. Yeah.
But anyway, Bandcamp is awesome. And it's also really good for people like us who don't want to have to try to find a record label to put out. Or, you know, like, we can just put it on the internet and sell it for not very much money and, you know, kind of do everything ourselves. And, you know, we're never going to make a living that way, but, it works for us and a lot of other people. And Bandcamp has been doing that whole thing where they waive their cut of the fees on Fridays, that they started doing that in the pandemic. So if you want to buy music from Bandcamp, you might want to like look ahead and see when there's a Friday coming up when they're doing that. They started doing it in the pandemic just to allow artists to make more money since nobody could tour or play shows, which is how a lot of people make most of their money. And it's really cool that they're doing that. So,
well, I would also like to mention for people who are going to go buy some music on Bandcamp that you can pay extra if you want to. And I always do because...
Oh, I love that.
I think that musicians do not get enough for the awesome stuff they do. And so I always throw on like another $5 or whatever, just cause you can.
Yeah. So that's good to point out. Cause I don't know if people always catch that, but that's really cool that you do that. I appreciate it. I think it's good to think about things like that. And that is awesome.
So, you know, what's funny is the last one that I bought on Bandcamp is from my favorite band of all time, which has actually been around since the Melrose Place era.
Is it Information Society?
Yes, it is.
I was thinking about, okay, what was I watching? Oh my God. I was watching something recently, like really recently, and they kept saying Pure Energy.
Oh, it's probably Star Trek. They say it all the time.
No, I don't watch that stuff. Absolutely, it was not that. I can promise you it was not that. But they kept saying Pure Energy, or maybe it was something I was reading. I literally cannot remember, but I remember being like, oh my God, every single time they say it, I just think about that song. Their big hit, where they've got that sample of the guy saying Pure Energy.
Yeah, it's Spock from Star Trek saying that.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
But they say it, a lot of different people on a lot of different Star Trek shows have said it. And I'm actually kind of... sorry if you're in Information Society and you hear this. I'm a little disappointed that you haven't used other people saying Pure Energy in more of your songs, but you know. But you're still my favorite band.
Well, that is, I remember like a million years ago they came to town. I mean, they probably come to town since then, but this is the time that I knew about. We had this club here called Blue Planet and they did this 80s night and Information Society played there.
Nice.
And man, I miss when 80s nights were like the big thing. I mean, I'm so old, that's, you know, but when I was in college and even into my, like, all through my 20s, it seemed like a lot of people, like a lot of clubs had an 80s night and it was always my favorite.
You know, thing. Like I used to go to an 80s night at a club, in Seattle called Knock Knock, which I miss terribly. It's, they lost their lease and never reopened anywhere else. But they had an 80s night on Saturdays. But what I hated about it is it did not take very long for the VJ to leave the 80s and start playing newer stuff. Like it was like an 80s introduction to the night. And then without fail, pretty soon he was playing Bad Romance by Lady Gaga.
Oh my gosh. I would be so mad.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That's kind of funny though, because it reminds me of how the church is our local goth club, and like without fail, the formula is from like 9 p.m. until about 10:30, almost 11. They'll play all the old school stuff for the olds, and then from that point forward, it's pretty much all the new stuff that I don't love. So, which I guess works for me, because then I can go early, get my groove on, and go
exactly.
home, go to bed.
They've got you figured out.
Like the elderly person that I am.
And one last thing about your Bandcamp release. Those pictures that you guys have of yourselves that go with this are amazing. You and Sean look awesome.
So those were like the visual inspiration was Christopher and Adriana from Sopranos.
Okay.
So we're like Jersey mobster people from the 90s in those pictures, or like the late 90s, early 00s.
One day I will have to watch The Sopranos.
Oh my God, Christopher, it's so good. It's so good. It's like so good. I rewatched the whole thing at the top of the pandemic, and I don't know, might be coming up for time for my next pass through
already.
The whole,
wow.
I mean, yes, it's one of those things where I could rewatch it probably on a loop forever, but I'm also kind of like that. Like sometimes if given the choice between watch a new thing or rewatch this thing that you've seen 75,000 times, I will rewatch the thing I've seen 75,000 times.
Yeah, I think I've done the Gilmore Girls 3 times.
God, you could not pay me to watch that show. I saw a clip from it the other day, probably on TikTok, and I was just like, everything about all these people is so annoying. I don't know why anybody would watch this, but I get it. Everybody loves it. So I don't want to yuck anybody's yum. Just not for me. I just don't think Gilmore Girls is for me.
Yeah. I'm also dying for another L Word watch through.
Oh my God. Yeah. When was the last time we watched that? It was a long time ago, probably back when it was still on Netflix. But yeah, I need to get into the new season of Generation
Q. Good, yeah. I like Generation Q, except for the music sucked. You'll see what I mean.
Well, I can't wait. Somebody told me last night via text message that so far these two episodes are messy as hell. So I'm excited.
Oh, wait, are you saying there's another new season now?
Yeah, it just started.
Oh my God.
There's two episodes of it.
Oh, I didn't realize. Okay, perfect.
So I've seen the first season of Generation
Q. Didn't the music suck so bad? Did you notice?
I don't remember. Mm. I don't know. It did not suck, though. This might be a good segue. It did not suck as bad, though, as all of the rock music that this show, Melrose Place, uses. Like, when, you know, like, somehow, sometimes they've started doing the whole, like, play a rock song or, like, a pop song, you know, over the intro credits. Is there, like, doing the postcard jiggly thing for the scenery? It's all so bad, Christopher. It's all so bad.
Yeah.
It's literally screams, we did not want to spend any money on this. So we just got the bargain basement barrel, scraping the bottom of the barrel bar band song to play.
And it shows.
It's terrible.
Hmm. Well, on that note, I suppose we can jump in, to another episode that has a musician that is way better than the musicians that actually play music on the show, because we still have Tracy Lords around. Episode 19 of season 3 is called Boxing Sydney, which is clearly a reference to the movie Boxing Helena.
Indeed.
Which I think has Julian Sands and what's her face? I just had her name in my head.
Oh my gosh, who plays the lady in that movie?
Sherilyn Fenn.
I don't remember.
Sherilyn Fenn.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I need to watch that again. It's been a long time.
I still haven't seen it.
I can't remember it being super good or anything, but it's one of those cult classics.
Yeah, I don't know that I expect it to be good, but yes, I listened to, there's this podcast called Girls, Guts, and Giallo that I really enjoy, and it's a woman who is, like a film, she's got like MFA and all this stuff and film art history and blah, 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 and talks about, but she's really into like horror movies And I don't know if that's like a straight, like, but not all the movies she talks about are straight up classic horror movies. It's like sort of, you know, a little all over the place, just sort of disturbing movies or movies that have sort of disturbing content or kink content, stuff like that. And she did an episode on that movie and it made me really want to watch it.
Well, I will say a much better Julian Sands movie is Warlock.
Oh yeah, I for some reason those ads are burned in my brain. I guess they were like all over TV when I was a specific age and I just remember them.
Yeah. Okay, so Michael surprises Amanda at her office to try to convince her that she does indeed have lymphoma, but she's in deep denial about it. He tells her to use her bitchy attitude to fight the cancer instead of him. By the way, I love that they figured out a way to have Michael and Amanda have a lot of scenes together because I like the way they play together.
Yeah, it's funny. I would not expect them to run into each other in this show much, obviously, and they really do have a certain chemistry.
I hope they bone at some point.
Funny. Oh, I mean, I feel like that's coming.
I hope so. Matt is back at work. You know, he's recovered from his violent gay bashing, and he confronts Kimberly because she tampered with her psych eval results, and well, because she had him beat up to give her the time to do it. She reminds him that he's not so innocent, having edited Michael's blood numbers after the accident, and he vows that somehow he'll remove her from the hospital. And I said somehow again in the outline because I'm such a good writer. Matt has a fancy lunch at a place called L'Orange with John Rawlings, the gay cop who wants him to press charges against Kimberly, but he thinks that it's hopeless and he will handle it himself. The gay cop, John Rawlings, says, at least there's a bright side. They got to meet. But Matt's not ready to date because he just got dumped by Jeffrey. And I'm sorry, but Matt is too serious. He needs to be more of a slut. That's his birthright as a gay man.
Listen, I'm a big fan of, you don't have to get into anything serious right after a breakup, but I'd definitely be fucking.
Yeah.
Like, whenever people would be like, they must have never loved me. They ran off and they did this with this person, like, right after we broke up. I'm like, what? That doesn't make any sense. People can do all kinds of things and still have feelings for each other.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just think that shit is super goofy as hell.
Yeah. Just, but yeah, we need Matt to take the train to Bone Town. Jake defiantly works on a bike by the pool in the dark. Because as we know, this is an ongoing thing. He's not supposed to work on bikes by the pool. He's supposed to do it in the garage or on the street. But Joe is there snapping photos and they talk about Austin. Amanda appears and bitches him out about the bike and says, if she ever sees it in the courtyard again, she'll have it hauled off and sold for scrap. When she gets to her apartment, there's a message on the phone machine from a doctor who's got biopsy results, and he agrees with Michael. She's got lymphoma, and further tests will be needed to see if it has spread. Michael calls Amanda at D&D while Allison's in the room, and Amanda plays it off as though she's stolen the Mancini Designs account rather than invite questions about her help. He talked to Dr. Sanchez and wants her to come in for tests that afternoon. She calls Billy an idiot on her way out the door for scheduling her into a meeting that she can't make it to. And at the hospital, Amanda tries to change her mind about doing the tests, but Michael forces her onto the bed. And like I said before, we need him to force her into bed as well. Consensually.
I mean, consensually.
Yes. We're so progressive. Amanda goes to Billy with her tail between her legs, and he agrees to go to dinner with her. When they get there, she makes meaningful eye contact with herself in the mirror before telling Billy that she's sick. And there are so many mirrors in this place. It's like they're eating dinner in a fun house.
So there's this restaurant in Dallas. We have this like structure called Reunion Tower. It's basically like this long column. And then there's like a ball on top of it. And the column is like, the elevator up and everything. And then the ball has a restaurant in it, and it basically, like, when you come up in the elevator, you come up into the middle of it. Oh, there's also an observation deck, but anyway. And then, like, the seats are on this thing that goes around the outside and rotates. Like, it goes around as you're eating, and you're getting, like, 360 views of the city or whatever. And the inside of the walls, like, so on one side of you is windows, but on the other side there's like a lot of mirrors. And it was fucking me up one time when I was younger and we were eating there. It was like my first time, and I would keep like catching this like a person out of the corner of my eye. And then at some point I realized it was me. Like I was passing mirrors. I was passing all these mirrors and like seeing myself.
Did we not have a conversation about the Reunion Tower before?
I don't think so. I don't remember.
So, I used to visit Dallas once in a while because my brother lived there for a long time. And it was really annoying because my family is the type who will never do stuff when you travel. It's always just like sitting around and watching TV and talking. And I'm like, I want to do stuff. And I said, I really, really, really want to go to the Reunion Tower. Can we please do one thing? I want to go to the Reunion Tower. I love viewing towers. I used to be a member at the Space Needle. And they said, fine, we'll go. And so we go there and we park and we go inside, and there's a sign that the Reunion Tower was closed for renovations.
Oh.
And so I didn't get to go. But to rub salt and lemon juice into that wound, I didn't go to Dallas the next Christmas, and they went without me.
Oh my gosh. What buttholes. Yeah. Well,
that harsh. So anyway, I still haven't been. If I ever come to Dallas and visit you, I definitely want to go. Hopefully nothing bad happens to it in the meantime.
Yes, hopefully not. I will say I might not be able to go with you because more and more I have these weird anxiety things where I can't do certain things, and elevators are hard for me sometimes. Oh. But I'll cheer you on from the bottom.
Yeah. Well, I won't force you to do anything you don't want to do because...
I used to go up there all the time, like, you know, I don't know, just certain things. I don't know. Well, my anxiety is weird.
This definitely makes me rethink my agenda for when we go to Vegas to meet up, because a lot of stuff in Vegas is like that, too. So.
Oh, yeah. I remember when we were there for the I went to Pride 48 twice in Vegas, and one of the 2 years everybody did like the bungee thing off of, like, so it was like you went up to the top of the stratosphere, and it's designed to look a little bit like the Space Needle, and then you could bungee off the stratosphere or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I know a bunch of people did that. I did not do that.
I would totally do that unless I'm too fat for it.
Yeah, I've bungee jumped. I haven't exactly bungee jumped, but I've done one of those slingshot things where you're in the you're in the little harness and they pull you back and then let you go. Yeah. I've done stuff like that before. I could probably do something like that again. I might be able to bungee jump. I just have certain, I've gotten stuck in more than one elevator. That's the thing. It's like, I think what's happening is when I get in an elevator and the doors start to close, I have some previous stuff that like just boom, like starts getting triggered for me, and I get in a little bit of panic.
Well, that's unpleasant. So
I
will definitely work around how you're feeling about that. So Billy assures Amanda in the Restaurant of Mirrors that she can beat the cancer and she doesn't have to go through it alone. And she, of course, says that he can't tell anyone at all. And we know what'll happen with that. Michael shows Amanda imagery of an additional tumor and says that she's in stage 3 and it's very treatable. She asks about statistics and he says her odds are about 50%, which I don't know if I would call that very treatable if it's only 50%.
Well, and I also am not sure that I would call stage 3 very treatable. I'm not a cancer expert, but stage 3, it's like stage 4 is terminal. And so like I would say stage 3 is treatable, but like very treatable, like no, like kind of like, I don't know. I don't think that's right.
Well, he informs her that she needs to start chemo, and of course, her main concern is her hair, which I said on the last episode, I would love to see fall out. When Amanda gets back to the office, Allison tries to ask where she's been because the art department needs her. Amanda says she needs to worry about her own work, which needs improving. And she tells her that if she can't handle her work, she can quit. Allison vents to Billy about Amanda, but Billy says she should give Amanda a break. Allison says that's easy for him since he's slept with her. Ouch. Allison wants to know why he's defending Amanda. So, of course, not 10 minutes after he agreed not to, he tells Allison that Amanda has cancer.
I mean, we saw that coming. Yeah.
Kimberly gets pulled over by gay cop John Rawlings, who pulls her out of her car and violently arrests her. He also says that he knows that she orchestrated Matt's attack and that he doesn't tolerate gay bashers. And with a gun in her face, tells her she needs to clean up her act or he'll make her life miserable. Years before Facebook and YouTube, Amanda fancies herself capable of a computer search to find a better course of treatment for than what Michael has recommended for her cancer. He quickly shows her why she's wrong and tells her not to do his job. They seem like they're gonna bone at some points.
I was just thinking about how, like, back when this episode, I would have been using Netscape. Do you remember Netscape?
Oh yeah. I specifically remember it being such a great thing because before Netscape came, I guess it was actually was Mosaic a browser before Netscape? I can't remember, but
I don't know. I think Netscape was like my very first browser. Yeah.
But it was so nice because before that, all I was ever able to do was use like Gopher and find stuff via the command line and download files and decode them, which was a lot of work when you just wanted to look at a Tori Amos picture, right?
Right. Oh my God, yeah.
One of my favorite things ever, speaking of Netscape, is the first Mission Impossible movie. Tom Cruise uses email in a very unrealistic way, and he uses the Netscape browser, but somehow it took a really long time for the movie to come out, and so the version that he uses was like super old by the time the movie came out, and it looked really bad, so that was a lot of fun.
I pretty much feel like nothing about the way people use computers in movies ever looks like the way people are using them in real life. You know what I mean? Like, it's so funny. It's so weird to me.
My favorite thing like that in the show that I will never stop talking about, which is Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, canceled way too soon. You know, they went forward into the future and John Connor goes to a computer store and uses a really bad Windows browser and stuff. And he doesn't even realize that it's on like a giant screen behind him. So somebody sees what he's doing. Classic, amazing stuff. I need to finish my rewatch of that. I got sidetracked. Anyway, the gay cop, meets up with Matt to tell him he scared some sense into Kimberly, and Matt is furious. John says that he'll back off if Matt says to, so Matt says to back off. Back at the hospital, Kimberly confronts Matt in the elevator, and she asks for a truce, and he says he'll consider it. And I think that's probably wise because John Rawlings, the gay cop, seems super bad news. Michael brings Amanda a teddy bear at D&D and she finally agrees to quit fighting Michael over treatment as long as he'll bend to her demanding important schedule. And I want to say, didn't she like tear his throat open or something at the end of the scene? I don't remember. Sydney and Ricky wait outside Melrose Place for a ride to a cult vacation. And Jane comes out with hair that's never looked better. Jane's hair is looking good. And she reminds her that she's unemployed and she needs to meet with her probation officer. But the bus comes and they leave. The bus pulls up to a small compound of tents and trailers in the desert. Sydney's disappointed that this retreat is not more of a resort, and spiritual guru Martin puts her right to work. Around the campfire, Martin tells a story about a car accident he had years before with his brother Robert, who had abandoned him thinking he was dead. He was 7 and Robert was 9. Martin was rescued by a neighbor, but not before Robert told their dad that Martin stole the car and crashed it.
They were 7 and 9.
Yeah. That's, how do you even reach the pedals?
Like, what?
I think that the age was important for this next weird detail. Because Martin said that the neighbor's warm arms as he carried him back to his parents was the first time that he'd ever felt loved and protected. And that's when he realized he would never be able to trust his family to take care of him. That sounded very homoerotic, the way he talked about his manly neighbor's burly arms. But he was also underage, so that's gross. As soon as he was old enough, he left his family and never spoke to them again. And now the cult is his home and his family. Sydney is very visibly moved by all of this. Tomorrow's a big day, the first in a very long journey. But Ricky lets Sydney know that she has to stay up all night serving Martin tea and food because he barely sleeps. Sydney arrives at Martin's trailer with his tea and finds him in bed with Ricky and another woman. Finally, the benefit of being a cult leader is sex with multiple women.
I mean, I think that's always the like the surprise. Yeah. Like, oh, you thought this was about spiritual enlightenment? Surprise, it's about this one guy getting to have sex with a bunch of people. Yep.
Ricky reveals Martin's actually her husband. And when Sydney asks why they don't wear wedding rings, he explains that those are a restriction from the outside world and that they have their own sign. It's a tattoo of an M that Ricky has behind her ear. This is, you know, shades of Nexium happening here. Maybe they were inspired by this. They invite Sydney to pour herself a cup of tea and drink it in bed with them. She declines this lopsided four-way, and Martin, disappointed, dismisses Sydney for the night. And I looked up the actor who played the other woman. I don't know how to pronounce her name. Chatten Anderson. But she's eventually, or maybe already did, play a teen model on Models, Inc. So... I did not recognize her, but I found a connection anyway. The next morning, Martin explains that everyone needs to write letters to their parents to heal their relationships. And the way that their parents could do that is to send money for their spiritual educations. What a grifter. Sydney wants to get back to LA to meet with her probation officer. So Ricky accuses her of being jealous, saying every woman there wants to bone Martin. Not sure what's in it for the dudes who are there. Maybe Ricky puts out for them. I don't know. Sydney brings her duffel bag to Martin's trailer to say goodbye and finds him berating a stockbroker on the phone. She tells him that she needs to be responsible and see her probation officer. And he says that he wants her to stay. She says she's leaving, even though she has to walk several miles to the highway and hitchhike. And later on a remote road, Sydney thinks she's found a ride, but it's actually Martin and Ricky in a truck with another dude in the back who helps them kidnap her. They bring her back to the compound and they put her in a hole in the ground with a locking trap door. And the episode ends with her screaming for help, but nobody comes.
And I was like, the second all this started happening, I was like, of course Sydney has been roped into a cult. That seems very Sydney.
Oh, for sure.
seems like very on brand for Sydney to get roped into a cult. And here we are at St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Martin lets Sydney out of the box in the morning and tells her she can leave, but he won't help her go because he's invested too much in her. With a little more word salad, he convinces her to stay. Jane comes to Jake's to ask if he's heard from Sydney and tells him she thinks she's in a cult. Sydney's probation officer did a search with a cult hotline, which confirmed Martin's a known cult leader. Once again, Jane and Jake plan to rescue Sydney, this time from the compound, which we learn is all the way in Tucson. Which is wild because there's like tons of places in California inland that you could probably have your cult. Ricky and Sydney fawn over Martin until he shoots bottles and he tells her to go to the gun shack and find a gun to play with. It turns out there's a huge arsenal in there and everything's kept loaded. She hits a bottle on her first try and Martin takes credit for clearing her mind of negative thoughts. Okay, so as a person who's been like through some training around gun safety, like no one who knows their way around guns would ever be like, you person who's never used a gun, go in the gun shack and get a gun. And like, especially because they're all loaded, apparently, like that would not happen. No. Even a bad guy who's knows his way around guns would just not do that because that would be dumb and bad.
Like, he should be smart enough to know that he should have all of the ammunition so that nobody can turn on him.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. But I feel like his whole, like, what goes an unloaded gun? Like, I think his whole idea is to just be at the ready to shoot people. Yeah. I don't know. Jane and Jake stop at a diner on the way to Tucson, and Jane apologizes for not believing him about Chris and for knowing him so long without becoming better friends sooner.
And this is where I started getting grossed out, thinking that they might bone.
I mean, I feel like we have to be ready for every single person on this show to end up in a coupling with every other person on this show at least once, yeah. At least in the heteronormative way, or, you know, whatever.
Basically everybody except Matt.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's going to bone except Matt. And there's a flurry of activity at the campground, at the compound, because Jane and Jake are spotted as they approach. Jane runs up to Sydney, but she pushes her away, and Martin tells them Sydney's free to decide who she does and doesn't want to talk to or go with. She says she's found her home, and her family asks them to leave. Back at Melrose Place, Jane can't shake the feeling that Sydney was signaling to them that she needed help. They decide to go all the way back to Tucson. Like, what? They literally, Christopher, they drove all the way from Tucson to LA.
I'm going
to
look that up right now, Angela.
And then literally, as they're walking up to the door of the apartment, Jane is like, I just can't shake this. Wait a minute. And then they turn right around. Like, it's got to be at least a 10-hour drive.
It's almost 500 miles.
Like, that's bananas.
Yeah. And why didn't they just stop at the diner and have that conversation?
Yeah, I just don't feel like she would drive all the way back to LA and then literally have this epiphany right before they get to the front fucking door of her apartment and have all that time to think about it.
And they could at least go inside and pee before they turn around and leave.
I mean, it's so wild. They didn't even go in and change their underwear. Like, I don't know. I mean, I've never had a family member who ended up in a cult, so I don't know. Maybe the emotional moment is just too much and this is how their brains are working. But I just, there's so many unanswered questions about this whole back and forth to Tucson situation.
Man, Jake, what a guy.
Yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, he really as actually that's so funny because as they turned to walk back to the car to go back to Tucson, I was like, Jake really is the nicest person on this show. When they get back to the compound, Martin tells Sydney she has to shoot Jake and Jane. She pulls the gun on Jane, but tells him to leave, mouthing, please go, to Jake. But Sydney turns the tables on Martin, shooting the tires out of his bus and jumping into the cabriolet. Oh my God, that was my dream car when I was a kid. Like, convertible cabriolet, a white one. Absolutely my dream car forever and ever. Martin bows to Ricky that he'll take care of Sydney another time. Jane goes to Jake's to thank him for all his help extracting Sydney and asks if she can make him dinner, though it's obvious she wants to do breakfast, if you know what I mean. I don't know. So Ricky calls Sydney, but she's screaming. She's screening the call with the phone machine. She tells Sydney she and Martin need to go away for a while, but they'll be back for her. She heads to Jake's for some help, but sees him and Jane enjoying their romantic dinner through the blinds. And I think we all know what's going to happen next with that. Also, like, their whole sitting on the couch thing, like, Jane was, like, feeding Jake something, and it was very weird.
Yeah, whatever. I can't think of two people who have less chemistry together on this show. Like, it's weird to think about. Although we have seen Jane get kind of freaky when she wants to. Like, the way she slept with Michael in Vegas just because she wanted some dick. Like,
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, go for it.
Jane has become more likable, yeah. I feel
Oh, for sure.
She's way less whiny.
Yeah, season one Jane with her feelings journal made me want to claw my eyes out.
God, I would have cheated on that bitch too, let's be honest. Like, it's
with
so
her
annoying.
Sister and her mom.
Amanda's in the hospital getting chemo, but still making business calls and thinking she'll be able to work the rest of the day. Amanda's got workaholism.
Oh, for sure.
Michael again tells her she needs to take it easy. Matt runs into gay cop John at the hospital, who asks him out. Matt can't go because there's a computer program changeover that night, and apparently he also works for IT. Allison's bummed because even though D&D was supposed to be a ghost town, it's now poppin', and tons of Valentine's Day flowers are arriving, and none are for her. She gets no sympathy from Billy since he hates Valentine's Day, but then he suggests that they go get some for Amanda. Allison's into the idea and says she has a friend with a flower shop. Amanda's pissed because Allison sent something to a client without her approval. When Allison's nice to Amanda, after she chews her out, Amanda figures out Billy told her she has cancer. When they say they just want to help, Amanda accuses them of gunning for her job. Matt and Joe talk about her job opportunity at a newspaper at Shooters, and somehow John, the gay cop, shows up. Matt invites him to join them at the table, and John tells Joe there's no way she can get the gritty pictures she's after on her own. He'll take her on a ride-along. Joe's thrilled to get photos of sex workers outside the Chinese theater, but they're interrupted by a call about a drug dealer. Also, you shouldn't just take pictures of people.
Right.
Like, doing... Anyway, whatever. Like, obviously, photography is very... I have a lot of questions about photography and ethics every time I encounter that entire genre of doing
candid anything. Photos and...
Yeah, like, of, like, street photography. I don't know. I have big questions, but whatever. He brings Joe along to investigate for some reason, and instead of waiting in the car, like he says, she gets out and finds him beating up a suspect, which she gets tons of photos of. Kimberly and Michael's smooching at the beach house are interrupted when Amanda calls because she's been sick for hours. Kimberly's pissed when he leaves to take care of her lemon lime.
Wow, that's a bad sentence. Take her some.
Take her some lemon lime soda crackers and 5 doses of Compazine for her nausea. He convinces her that taking care of herself is not admitting she's weak, and she asks him to stay a little longer. They snuggle up on the couch, and she'd definitely bone him if she weren't sick. Kimberly finds Amanda's file and confronts Michael for taking on her case instead of sending her to a specialist. Joe shows Matt the photos of John and tells him, and he tells her that he went after Kimberly. He asks what Joe will do with the photos, and she says she can't get involved, and maybe the whole thing was justified anyway. Later, two cops come to her door to ask about John. They ask if she knows what happened in the alley, and she lies and says she stayed in the car. Joe wants to destroy the photos so she doesn't have to worry about John, but Matt points out that if she does, she could be considered an accomplice. He offers to hold on to them.
One of those cops was played by Mark Metcalf, who's the dad in those Twisted Sister videos.
I was like, I know this guy. And I'm sure he's been in other things too. But like, I was like, I definitely know this guy. So I'm glad that you answered that question. Billy and Allison buy Amanda a wind-up heart for Valentine's Day. And she smiles until they leave and smashes it once the door
is closed. This is what I was thinking of before scene. When I was thinking that she assaulted the teddy bear. It was this wind-up heart.
Billy brings a bowl of popcorn and movies to Allison's place and a rose. They hug and pop in the Dirty Dozen.
There was this long thing about there being two movies to choose from, and they went on and on about how to choose. And I think the other choice was more romantic, but I was just like, I need them to shut up. So I didn't summarize.
Yeah, I feel like they're definitely going to get back together, maybe. I don't know. Michael comes to D&D with blood tests. And, like, I don't love Billy, but, like, I'm also just kind of, like, I don't know. Allison, I'm off and on with her. She definitely deserves our sympathy in a lot of ways, but she's also kind of annoying. Michael comes to D&D with blood test results, and they aren't good. Her white blood cell count is dangerously low, and he wants her to go to a research treatment on the East Coast. He believes she meets every criteria for the study, but they have to be sneaky to get in, and they should go to New York and ambush Dr. Steele. John surprises Joe while she walks home with groceries and says internal affairs is all over him about the guy he put in a coma, and it's just because he's gay. She tries to leave, and he accuses her of not staying in the car. She gets home and finds her apartment completely ransacked.
And I am so confused because I could swear that I did the summary for all three episodes. But I am not seeing episode 21. I just now changed the name of the tab because I remember episode 21.
I watched it
because, you know, Ricky. Oh, no. Wait, did Ricky destroy the bar in the last episode?
Okay, yeah. So Ricky destroyed the bar. That was in the lead up to Sydney going to be with the cult in the desert. Like, because they were trying to basically drive a wedge between her and her friends by having everybody blame her for everything.
So it looks like I meant to watch episode 21 and I didn't. I can't believe it.
Well, that's okay. Because I feel like this is, you know, we've been, we've been recording for about an hour. I think this is fine. You know, whatever. We're not very professional people over here at Melrose Sheltering in Place. So if we fuck with the formula, it's okay. Also, last time we talked about basically what amounted to four episodes because we had that one that was like 2 hours long or whatever.
Right.
So I don't know. It all evens out in the wash.
Oh, my God. So I was thinking that this was more like a normal show. And I was like, there's probably only a couple left this season anyway. Nope. It goes up to episode 30.
Yeah, there's like 30 seasons. No, wait, there's 30 episodes a season, basically.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah. So, I mean, we're making tracks, but we definitely... It's so good that we switched to the three episodes format because, Christopher, we would still be in season two.
So, this does work out pretty well then because we'll have 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, and then the finale, which is a double episode. So if I could have done this on purpose, I would have felt smart.
Also, I realized this morning before, like, I've been having this problem lately where I am finagling my schedule and not putting things on my calendar. So we're going to have to change our next episode recording. I am going camping that weekend with some people, so we'll just need to talk about our schedule. Okay. But We can do it. I mean, hell, we could do it next weekend if you want. But anyway, we could talk about that off air.
We'll end the recording before we before we pull back the curtain too much, right?
Yeah, we need to keep a little bit of the mystery happening. Yeah. Well, y'all, this is a, you know, this is the end of the episode, I guess. Yeah, I don't know that I have anything else to say. Oh my gosh.
I don't either. You know, it's been a fun, episode, a little shorter than I planned for.
So many things happen in the next episode, Christopher.
Oh, I'm excited.
Can't wait for you to watch it so we can talk about it. It's very, it's kind of weird, some of the things that happen. But anyway, we'll get there.
All right. Well, I mentioned it at the top of the show, but just as a reminder, if you would like to interact with this show on social media, please find our Instagram at Melrose Sheltering in Place.
And if you, let us know if you have any thoughts about the show.
Unless you don't like the show, then keep it to yourself because we don't care.
Yeah, we really don't care. We're not working on improving this in any way, shape, or form.
We,
pretty obvious, I think, at this point.
We still like praise, but we aren't going to try to change anything to earn more of it.
Oh my gosh, this is my I'm trying to get into that attitude in all facets of my life, TBH. All right, well, that's it. Bye.